Now the fun begins.
Bridget.
Stop! You violated the law.
Welcome back to another episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, all that jazz, all the impressionable things. I remembered it this time, Mike. All that jazz wherever you get a podcast ad. Check us out on there. And follow us on Twitter, of course, at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games alike, and our dope giveaways. I'm your host, as always, Travis White, a.k.a. Travelist, on most internet platforms. Joining me, back in action, my partner in crime, Mike P-Pack. Mike, what's good? What's going on? And I want you to tell me about the new grind, what the new grind is, my friend. what is the play right now?
Yeah, I've been spending a little bit of time on Weed Shop 3. I saw Moist Critical playing it, and
catch people up if there are people who are I let's put it this way. I would fully imagine if you're listening to our show, you're knee deep in the weeds of what gaming is, and you know, you're an enthusiast gamer, so you probably know what this game is. But if there are people out there unsure of what Weed Shop 3 is, fill them in on what exactly you do with this game.
Yeah, so for Weed Shop 3, basically you run an operation, I guess you could call it, that you grow weed and sell it to constituents. There's a few different ways that you have to go about building up your clientele. Mainly, you grow some marijuana. You start off like kind of funny. They just have you grow it out of a toilet because it's, toilet weed or whatever. And then after that, you know, you kind of go into, growing out of that little toilet, rolling it up and taking it to individuals, letting them smoke a little bit to see if they're interested, and then selling afterwards. You kind of start by raiding. There's like joints and stuff by garbage cans that you go and pick up for free, and then you can go use those to kind of grow your clientele, and you kind of get people hooked on your weed. And then as you level up, you get better and better weed, and you get more expensive equipment for better quality weed. And there's like three different, I guess there's actually four different customer types. There's the burnouts, which are basically like the worst of the worst. There are tourists, which is like the middle ground. And then there are they're locals, and then there are influencers. You can kind of figure out what the influencers are. But basically, you just kind of level up, and, you know, it's a lot of meticulous work. There's some different strategies to succeeding in the game. I haven't really played any mini games, and I'm still pretty far and doing pretty well in the game. Basically, you know, you can kind of have a lot of stock and just roll it out. I'm a little bit more meticulous, and I'm a little bit more proud, and I want to have my weed be like the highest quality. So I use a lot of boosters and stuff and keep my weed at about 100% like every time it blooms. The only downfall to that is there's a lot of micromanagement. Like, I have to constantly be paying attention to my plants and kind of let the rest of the stuff do their thing. Like, I will go out when I have a pretty decent stock built up. I will go out and start to work the streets again, handing out my own rolled, like, joints, blunts, whatever, to try to get some more business drummed up to sell more. It's a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun doing it. And I just, it's something that, like, you can kind of turn your brain off and go at, but the way that they kind of incorporated progress and progression along with like the quality and the different ways, because it does feel like you can definitely play it a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. You can just have a lot of variety of weed, and you don't necessarily have to pay attention to the quality. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist with certain things, and that's one of them. So I'm pretty focused on keeping it as the highest quality, but having less strains to choose from. So there's a lot of different ways that you can go about it. I think that I progressed faster than a lot of other people did, specifically because I used I made the highest quality stuff I could make, and then would go to the tourists first, and now I'm working on locals to get them to come into my shop. And when you give them high quality weed, they're more likely to buy from you. So having so much high quality on hand all the time, I think did really well, you know, for me to grow. So yeah, I mean, I've just been having a lot of fun playing it. It's just something that is very different from other games that I've played, and it kind of gives you a little bit of a different feel. It's almost similar to like a Roller Coaster Tycoon, just like obviously more modern and a lot different. I'm not building amusement parks, but you kind of get the idea if you've ever played Roller Coaster Tycoon back in the day. It's kind of a similar feeling of accomplishment whenever things are going well for you.
No, definitely. And it's funny to see how detailed and intricate that game is whenever you think of Weed Shop of the series. There's obviously a bit of a, you know, how do I want to put this? I don't want to say this in a way that is like degrading the people who made this, because it's clearly done with a lot of, you know, TLC and care to it. You know, the way it's developed, because there is this deep layer to the game and actually keeps you coming back. The loop is very engaging, but there's a bit of this like satire in a way, maybe for lack of a better term, when talking about it, that you kind of go into it with like it's you're basically being the dope man, like it's basically playing out Pineapple Express in a way, like just in a lot less zanier fashion to a degree, I guess I should say. But but it's funny to see how kind of like almost like don't judge a book by its cover in a way of how detailed and like intricate the game can be at times. Whenever you do look at like a lot of sim style games, when you look, you know, look back at Roller Coaster Tycoon, Sim City, even games like Dev Tycoon and a lot of your, you know, tycoon genres that you'll have, like, you know, this to me, when I see, you know, whether it's you play it, whether it's Charlie playing it, you know, it takes a lot more than just like, oh, this is something I'm going to giggle at every now and then, which there is, trust me. You look at some of the NPCs and shit that roll through, like, come on now, like, they're ridiculous. But at the same time, too, there's this layer of, you know, no, at the basis of this game, we built and designed and developed a gameplay loop that, you know, actually stands on its own whenever it's put up against so many other people. I mean, hell, you're somebody who, what, you've probably played like 30 hours of this game, something like that, I would imagine.
You're talking about Weed Shop?
Yeah.
Let me look real quick. It's in my favorites. 27.
Yeah, so right around there. Yeah, you've been putting time in. You know, Charlie's been playing it a ton on stream. So it's like, you know, there's obviously a pull to this game that, at least to me, is standing out much more than a lot of other, like, tycoon games that you'll find out there. And sure, it's probably too, because you look at now comparative to, you know, yeah, Roller Coaster Tycoon is something you don't necessarily hear about that much anymore, for, you know, a multitude of reasons, licensing and just where the game is currently and, you know, where people's interests are. But it shows that you could take something like, you know, the popularity of marijuana since it's especially been legalized and the mainstream popularity at that point, and, you know, the mainstream use of recreational marijuana legally, that you could use that as such a way to get in and, you know, get people into a genre of, yeah, it may start out just looking like something that is a little slapstick, and sure, it is to a degree by all means, but it's clearly that there's a lot of TLC that went into this game, more so than just, hey, like some of the things you'll find on Steam. We've all fucking seen it. I could click on the store right now on Steam. Well, granted, it might be a little harder to just pull up given the Steam sale going on right now. But normally you can just open up the Steam store and go on, you know, popular new releases or something like that. And you're going to find, you know, either like a porn visual novel or something that is, you know, just like a random like 2 cent game that is definitely just like a Bitcoin miner, like something like that, where you're going to find basically just like bloatware. But this definitely isn't that. And I think it's really says a lot to, you know, where games like that are kind of moving towards, and really just kind of your baseline, like, hey, this is getting a, like your baseline, I guess, Steam game, like not even, I wouldn't even say indie game, but baseline Steam game that you're getting out, that, you know what I mean? So it's just, it's interesting just to kind of see where that game's gone. And obviously you got, have guys like Charlie, like Morris Critical, playing this game, putting eyeballs on it, you know, who the fuck knows if there'd even be, you know, whatever it is, 2,000 people playing this right now, you know, if he wasn't, or at least didn't get the eyes on it, especially too when it comes to streaming and stuff like that. So, besides that, Mike, anything else you've been playing?
No, not necessarily. Just still playing a little bit of Halo 2 here and there. That's really it. Just kind of in my off time, if I haven't been able to get Halo 2 series going, I've just been playing Weed Shop and, you know, having a lot of fun with it. I will say that they probably had an opportunity to capitalize on the current state of video games, like everyone else kind of has, and just littered it with microtransactions. But much to their, my surprise, that's not the case currently. So I'm happy to support small indie developers. I picked up Neon White. It kind of got overshadowed.
Oh yeah, that's
Weed
right.
Shop.
You did. Yeah. Yeah. But, talk about Neon White.
Yeah. I'm still super early into it, but it kind of got my attention when I went to Adam's and he was playing it and he let me play it a little bit, that it's basically like, you're basically trying to speed run every level. And you know, the mechanics are pretty simple, but they're cool. It's a fast paced game where, you're basically just going through levels, just trying to clear things as fast as humanly possible. Then they have leaderboards integrated right into the game, which any triple, quadruple, whatever the fuck term you want to use, developer out there who may or may not have a shooting game, not going to say any names, like, it's, this company integrated a fucking leaderboard right in the game. Like, figure it out. But outside of that, no, I just had a lot of fun with it. I don't really have all that much to say about it, just because I haven't gotten that many hours into it. It is just fun to, you know, try to clear levels as fast as possible and then see how you stack up against the rest of the world. And it's nice because it has your friends list as the first, like, separator. So if I go in there, I can see how quickly Adam cleared a certain level, and try to match that or clear that or whatever. And it's pretty sweet. I like that feature. You know, Hunt Showdown has that actually with the leaderboards, which I think's pretty cool also. You know, those types of things are something that seems so simple, but you know, as we've been learning with developers more recently, it seems like what's the like simple, easy answer to the people that actually play the game, it seems like the people that work on the games are kind of oblivious to that, unfortunately. So would be nice to see those types of things come back in a little bit and become a little bit more popularized again, I guess. I don't know when they ever fell out of popularity, but it'd be nice to see them come back.
No, definitely. And that's what, it's funny you brought up speedrunning, especially too, it's that time of year with summer games done quick and stuff like that. So like speedrunning in general has kind of been on my mind a little bit. Like I've even thought of like, there's a few games, especially too on the Bethesda side, that like I have somewhat of an interest in learning like glitched speedruns and any percent speedruns and things like that, that are just like wonky to go through and just like they would be a nice challenge for games that like, you know, and you know this from speedrunning like Ninja Gaiden and stuff like that, that it's such a unique perspective, you get such a unique perspective on that game and on the game that you do speedrun, that, you know, obviously you're not just playing that game out of, you know, oh, I'm just playing this to take in everything that's going. I'm playing this in a specific way that is changing my perspective on how I approach this game. And, you know, just to kind of switch it up a little bit, I've been thinking about that a little bit, but you bringing that up, I even kind of thought about that the other day, that there really aren't too many, you know, speed run design games, at least at the AAA level. And I wouldn't say this is obviously AAA. This is definitely an indie title, but really, that has caught mainstream attention. I mean, the last time that I really kind of thought and saw somewhat of success in terms of like trying to get people to focus on leaderboards and things like that. I would say like Astro's Playroom, like the like built-in or the pack-in game with PS5, like fucking incredible platforming game. But that was the last time I saw, you know, a decent amount of the industry kind of focusing on like, oh, this is a lot tighter and a lot more polished than, you know, a lot of people give it credit for or should expect for a pack-in, you know, platformer game that's really supposed to just be a walkthrough of your new console. But the time trials and things like that on there, people were trying to get world records, trying to do things like it was really kind of built to kind of push your friends and have that shit talking element to it of, you know, trying to get people on there. And I'm finding that obviously again, though, with Neon White, that I'm seeing, like, it seems like it is one of those games that's kind of putting a focus back on that throughout the industry of like Jeff Grubb from GamesBeat talking to he quote tweeted a couple of people at why am I blank? Fucking Kind of Funny. Andy Cortez over at Kind of Funny. And he was like saying something about like Andy tweeted something about like, oh, I got to do this. And, you know, then I'm probably going to play more Neon White. And he like quote tweeted and he was just like, well, he's probably going to do that pretty fucking slow, too. You know, clearly with how he plays Neon White, you know, that shit talking element that I'm seeing so many people like bring into and actually care about speedrunning a game and like speedrunning levels like. And I'm pissed. I'm actually kind of pissed at myself because I haven't picked it up yet, even though it's been sitting in my cart on Steam with all my other fucking Steam sale shit that I want to buy. But I do want to get into that and start playing that again. And I highly recommend, if you can, go watch Donkey's review of the game. It's like 2 minutes. It's in and out. But it's fucking so on point in terms of a lot of 90% of the people who play this game with the gameplay are going to love the gameplay. Like, it's one of those things that it is a fucking well-made, well-designed game. But there are going to be like 20% of people who enjoy this game for everything outside of it. Like, it's a fucking visual novel. Like, you got to, if you're not into that stuff, like, that's, if you are, that's totally fucking fine. Like, Adam digs that stuff. That is totally up his alley. Where me, if I step into that, like, I'm cool with anime. I have no fucking problem with anime. Like, there's a few that I still kind of dabble in every now and then. But I just, when it gets to the point of, like, Donkey clips out the one part perfectly, it's like, this girl's like, oh, Neon, my boobs are just too big. You don't have that problem. I'm like, I'd just be like, F, skip, skip. Like, no, we're not doing this. Like, come on.
I pretty much just fast forward all that stuff.
You're just literally gnashing F, like, leave now, stop.
I'm like, get me to the good parts where I just fucking zip around the map and do whatever.
Right. So, on my end, at least, I've kind of been hopping around a little bit with what I've been playing. Part of me wanted to finish up a couple of games. Like, I jumped back into Deathloop, thinking like, oh, you know, I'm so close to the end of this, I need to just cap this off. But it's one of those things that it feels like it's been so long since I got into that game that it's going to take a couple hours to just get used to playing this game again, let alone, hey, I'm on the back nine of this game. Like, this is where I'm actually, you know, testing my quote unquote skill within the game that I've kind of built up playing this game for a while. And it's one of those games that I'm going to have to dedicate more time to than I think I want to right now, so I've kind of pushed that away. And part of me is also like, man, I kind of want to jump back on, like, do a replay of the Arkham games, and even too, I've been wanting to. I kind of dabbled in that a little bit, but then I, part of me also thought like, oh well, you know, now that we've finally gotten Cyberpunk to a level that is kind of out there now, of hey, this is as close to 1.0 quote unquote what we wanted to release. Like, here is, you know, all these bug fixes, all these additional things, all these optimization things that have been done to the game. You know, this is the version that probably should have came out in December of 2020. Now that we kind of have that out with the next gen patches and things like that, I was like, I want to jump in on that. I've added more RAM to my computer since the last time I think I booted it up and stuff like that, that I'm like, probably is going to help. Plus on top of it too, I played it with my 2070, but I don't think I even touched it with my 2080 that I got in there, in my PC now. So I was like, I want to go and try this out, see how it runs, yada, yada. So jumping into that, it runs, you know, much, much better than it did when I, you know, played this at launch and for review for the show. It still has the same issues that, and I think I've just been for so long spoiled by The Witcher, that, not that I think the universe is bad, because I think CDPR really mapped out such a well-crafted universe and well-crafted narrative and characters I actually care about, and especially now, too, that we're starting to see more tweaks and improvements to NPC AI and things like that, that we're actually seeing this world become more and more livable and more immersive for the player as this game grows and gets older. Like, I think we're getting to a really good state with it, but I think just for me, I think The Witcher just completely spoiled me too much, to the point of, not that I don't enjoy this game, that I just think that I'm going to compare it too much to The Witcher. And it's not that style of game, because I have people tell me, like, I shouldn't tell me exactly, but, like, I've seen people, you know, their biggest qualm with The Witcher is, oh, the combat is, it's not very good, it's abrasive, yada yada. And I don't completely disagree, but I think it pushes you to learn its mechanics more than most standard RPGs do, like Bethesda RPGs, or, you know, any other kind of action RPG that you'll play, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn, or, you know, things like that, that you were kind of forced into having, kind of like, okay, here's how you kind of play, but you can just do whatever, we really don't care. Where The Witcher's combat is built around, well, no, you have to kind of approach it like, here's our mechanics. These are the mechanics to immerse you in the role of a Witcher, of Geralt. This is how he performs this. Like, you just have to get good at, you know, I hate using that term, but, like, get good at using those mechanics. The world, though, in itself is so open and brash that I just feel that game melted so many things and was such a melting pot of all the things that I love about not only RPGs, but video games and storytelling and narrative and immersion within media so well, that it's going to be naturally, Cyberpunk's going to always be naturally judged to specifically The Witcher 3 when it comes out, or when, you know, playing it and whatnot, that I'm just like, do I really want to invest the time into this world that I know I'm probably unintentionally going to have a bias against? But almost everything that I said back in our review, and you know, obviously review's up, feel free to go back. Anybody listening who hasn't watched that episode, that was, I want to say like 70 something. I don't know. I'll have to look back and see, but our review's back there on that. I still stand by on it being a fantastic RPG experience. Still, I think it is a great narrative, and now a very good case with the game and the mechanics and stuff like that. I think we have a game now that is, hey, sure, I would recommend, like, if you're looking to find an RPG to play right now, and it's $30 right now on the Steam sale, you know, that I'm not turning away to say, hey, that's, you know, I would wait on that. Like, if you bought it at $30, I'd be like, okay, yeah, you're going to get a good time out of it. I think that's justifiable for it at this point. You know, so it's just, you know, it's at this point that where I think, I just don't think I'm ever going to get the same affinity for it compared to The Witcher. But outside of that, though, Molly and I have been kind of dipping our toes in and out of Diablo 3, playing back through that. But that's something I've played through how many times now. But just something that, you know, I thought was a good couch co-op game for us to play through. So we're kind of, you know, in and out of that. And then, while during all of this, where I'm like, man, I'm just not finding something I want to, like, play again, or, like, you know, sink my teeth into or something like that, I booted up Red Dead 2. So I actually booted that up last night and just started a new game on, I played through it, obviously, on console at launch. But a couple years ago when it came out on PC, I did pick it up, but I think I was still too close to the release of that. And it's such a slow burn game that I was like, you know what? I played a couple hours of it, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait. And I think it might be time now. Like, I was playing it last night, and I'm like, I think I'm ready to like kind of semi-commit to this and like sit in and kind of sink into it a little bit. If this is the single player game I'm playing. So we'll see, but it's still just as good as before. I mean, Rockstar's writing on this, granted, a lot of issues and logistical issues in terms of their practices with, you know, working environments and whatnot. That obviously was at a cost for all this, but the writing, the immersiveness, this world is, I think, one of the most... This is whenever people turn to... Whenever people look at this game, yes, it is not for everyone, but this is the one... If I was going to show people, like, an example of how video games are art, I would show them this game and be like, this is art. This is... this when it may not be for everybody. You may not get it. It may not chime with you, but this is... This is when people say video games are art, this is the best example of this. Whatever, because I still think it's a masterpiece. I think it's in that upper echelon of, you know, probably potentially top 10 games of all time. But I'm excited now to kind of go back and see, because there are parts of it that I know I kind of shied away from because I was like, fuck, I'm already 50 hours into this game. I'm ready to, I remember I had to do like a couple of reviews over the next week or two for a site I was writing for at that point. Like, I was like, I kind of want to wrap this up. Not that I'm not enjoying this, but like this epilogue's kind of going on a little longer than I expected. And I'm just kind of ready to put a bow on it. But now that I'm not kind of pressed up against it, I'd like to kind of maybe sink into the game a little bit. So hopefully I'll be able to do that over the next couple weeks or so, because I'm sure this game's going to take a while to play back through, and there's other shit I'm going to want to play too on top of that, other stuff we're going to play and whatnot. But anywho, Mike, let's jump into the show, why don't we? So the first thing I want to kind of start off with, we got a couple news articles for today that I kind of want to go over, but the big one of them, if you want to call it that, because we still don't really know anything about it, but I think is really interesting to talk about, given the just conversation and the vibe around this studio right now. But Miyazaki says From Software's next game is, quote, in the final stages of development. This comes from Chris Scullion over at Video Games Chronicle, as always, link in the description. Elden Ring director Hidetaki Miyazaki, I always butcher his first name, has claimed that the next From Software game is nearing the end of development. In a new interview with Japanese site 4Gamer, Miyazaki was asked about a previous comment he made in a 2018 interview about having multiple games in development. Asked if one of those games was still on the way, Miyazaki confirmed, yes, it is. We are in the final stages of development, end quote. In the previous 2018 interview, Miyazaki has stated that since 2016, the studio has been working on, quote, 3.5 games, the half being the PS4 VR title, Diranis. I don't remember that one, to be quite honest. And then kind of following up with the original release of this story, there are 3.5 lines that have been in the works since that time, Miyazaki said. Half of that is Diriance, if I'm saying that right. I'm sure I'm butchering that to all fucking back. One is Sekiro, and the remaining two are unannounced titles. When asked to elaborate, he said, quote, it's not the right time to talk about them in detail, but I think they are both that they are both games that are typical of us. It will take a little more time, but I think we will be able to talk to you about them one by one as they take shape. In the 4 years having followed that interview, one of the three games was revealed to be Elden Ring, but the other has still never been announced. Given his claims at the time, this new unannounced game has seemingly been in development since at least 2016. It's believed the game in question may be Armored Core 6, which was reportedly mentioned in a consumer survey earlier this year. Reset Error user Red Licorice claimed in January that they had received a survey from the Elden Ring and Dark Souls studio, which seemingly revealed the first details on the next unannounced mech combat game. The alleged unnamed installment, which would be the first full Armored Core title since 2012, was said to be said to feature a, quote, scientific world created by Hidetaki Miyazaki, dynamic action, and a high degree of freedom in customization. So Mike, From Software, a studio that we've been very familiar with this year. Obviously, Elden Ring being a game that, you know, everyone can go check out our review on, which is still crazy that it's doing numbers this moving forward. Like, when I go and look at our metrics, that's always one of the top, like, performing episodes of the month or whatever, you know, of the week or however you look at it. There's always new people getting into that. Thank you, one, for that. But it's just crazy how much breath and how much weight this game and this studio carries, you know, every time we talk about it. But it's a studio and a development team that we've become very familiar with, especially this past year with Elden Ring and how much we loved it. Spoiler, go listen to the show or that episode. But it's interesting to think about the bandwidth this studio has, though, because I think a lot of us really kind of circle in and kind of focus in on what they do with the Souls-like genre. We're talking Dark Souls, we're talking Bloodborne, we're talking, you know, Sekiro, and now obviously Elden Ring on top of that. But Armored Core is kind of a separate entity in itself that I don't really have a lot of familiarity with. I know you don't really, Mike, either, but we do have this affinity for From Software, knowing what they can put out. And I guess more what I'm looking at is we have these unannounced titles that are coming. We have these, you know, kind of ducks in a line that they're working on, and clearly they are working on these projects that they're able to use multiple teams, and they have, you know, kind of found what I think is this secret sauce that a lot of Western developers are still trying to find whenever we're talking and focusing in on, you know, one specific development studio, that they're finding kind of the secret sauce to having multiple teams and having multiple projects turning without necessarily sacrificing any of them and knowing exactly when to kind of put the pieces together on each of them. So even if we don't have too much experience with that, what are you looking for in a From Software game when it comes to, you know, hey, when we're looking at Elden Ring, we're looking back on, you know, things that made us enjoy that game and that this studio that we appreciate, you know, what are you looking for in another From Software game? And really, I guess, sure, we have this game coming out and this probably is the next title. And who knows? It may not be Armored Core. It may be something else. It may be another Soulsborne, whatever. But I guess moving forward, what are you hoping that not only, you know, Miyazaki and the From Software development teams kind of focus on moving forward, but what are you hoping that some of the development teams, you know, over here, West, you know, the Western development teams in the US, Canada, yada, yada, kind of focus on and kind of take from them to maybe find similar success with even just the logistics of development?
Yeah. You know, I feel like it's definitely been said before that, by a lot of different people that Elden Ring specifically from Software is what a lot of people would like to see be like the poster child for what game development should probably be. Of course, you know, it's tough to really say from an outside point of view, in my opinion. You know, I do have pretty strong opinions about game development. I'm sure, you know, everyone can surmise that from some of my comments or some of my takes about it. But, you know, I'm the type of person who, you know, I look at the game that, you know, was produced by From Software with Elden Ring, and I see a game that doesn't rely on microtransactions to be successful, focused on making a quality game with good writing, with great visuals, with difficult but rewarding combat. And, you know, people went out and bought the living shit out of this game. And again, you know, we've had these conversations before on the show about gatekeeping with difficulty, you know, the get good conversation that can happen sometimes with that. Mm-hmm. And I've always been on the side of like, you know, I understand that there are people who, you know, might be a little disappointed if a game's too difficult. But also, I've also, you know, been staunch in saying like, you know, there are games that just might not be for you, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to play it. You can watch someone on YouTube play it nowadays. You can watch someone on Twitch. You know, luckily now we have those types of mediums where you can kind of, if you cannot get through the story yourself, you know, you're more than welcome to play it that way.
I think that, not to interrupt you, but I think that's really just because I think this would be good to kind of add to that. I definitely think there's an element too now with the way that games are consumed and games are talked about. And it's mostly, I think, through now we have the lens of the influencer and the 24/7 news cycle. And, you know, we're always looking, what's the next thing? What's the next big thing? What's the next thing people are talking about? That I think there's this underlying pressure put on people to enjoy stuff. Like, I think, like, it's that feeling of, like, oh, if you don't play this, you're missing out. In short, there's always kind of been that, but more so in the fact of, like, if you're not playing this, you're not gaming. Or this is the game right now. Like, you either are playing that or you're not playing games. Or, like, you feel this underlying pressure to like this game. And to me, that's bullshit. Like, you should like what you like, and if you don't gel with it, don't feel pressured to play a game. I mean, there's fucking how many games that I've tried out that, you know, some people be like, oh, shit, I spent that money on, you know, this game, and I'm not even liking it. And, yeah, I would have been like, ah, I guess maybe, you know, it wasn't for me, and oh, well, you know. But at the same time, I'm also like, well, I'd rather support somebody's art and somebody's, you know, project than, you know, and it be up somebody's alley that hopefully they get another one of these one day because of, you know, a couple extra sales. But, you know, I'm okay if it's not for me. I'm also, you know, in the camp of, like, I don't really care about, at the same time, you know, difficulty and stuff like that with games. Like, you can play on baby ass baby mode, as they call it, like, you know, super super easy mode or story mode or whatever. Like, you can do that, that's totally fine, I don't give a shit. But I'm also in the camp, like you, Mike, of, at the same time too, I don't necessarily, if Miyazaki and the crew at From Software developed this game and had this in mind with their creative vision of how this game's supposed to be, and that is to be pretty brutally hard or to be a challenging yet rewarding experience, I don't want them to change that. I want them to make the game that they want to make, like, period. I don't want anybody to sacrifice their art. So I just want to throw those 2 cents in there because I thought it did kind of mesh with what you're saying of, I think there's this, like, underlying pressure in just the echo chamber that we're in right now of the games industry and, you know, digesting games, that, like, there's this pressure on, you have to like this game, and that's just fucking not the case.
I think that's a more, you know, I don't want to offshoot too far, but that's definitely, I feel like, a bigger issue in the world in general, and it's kind of always been that way. Things that really come to mind when I think about this are things like music, movies, TV shows, things of that nature. I feel like Western culture is really bad with flavors of the month, flavors of the week, flavors of the year. You know, you can go back to the Roaring Twenties to really point, you can really pinpoint when society moved out of factories, you know, 12, 13 hours a day, sometimes 16 hours a day. Working conditions got better. People had more free time. And all of a sudden, when people in the Western world, specifically America, had more free time, all of a sudden they spent more time in leisurely ways. And that's really, you can go back to the 1920s to put your finger on a point in time in American history where, like, when did people become obsessed with movie stars, obsessed with athletes, obsessed with, you know, all those types of things. And yeah, I mean, you go back to the 1920s and that's when you put your finger on that and say, this is when society took that turn. And I feel like that's a more overarching problem with our society in general. But, you know, I couldn't agree more. And I think that I feel like gaming sometimes and game developers get into this rat race where they're trying to appease to as many people as possible. And, you know, speaking specifically business-wise, it's probably a good idea, right? Because you want more customers. But at the end of the day, like, I just feel like there was a big thing where people and game development studios were really worried about what kind of games they were producing and what kind of audiences that they would generate with those games versus From Software saying, like, hey, too bad, so sad. We're making the game that we want to make. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's okay too. We don't, like, we're not going to hold it against you. But this is what we want to do, and this is what we think makes the most sense for a game that we want to make. And, you know, it was, you know, a smashing success, and rightfully so. I think the polish with that game, all of those things, you know, lend a hand to why that game was so successful. But pivoting more towards relevant to today's topic, I know Armored Core, was an original Xbox game that I would see people playing. I saw it in stores, like when I first got my Xbox, you know, way back at basically the original launch of the Xbox shortly thereafter. I don't think we had it day one, but my brother got it shortly after going to a Halo 1 land at his buddies. And ever since then, it was kind of a wrap for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely something that has been around. I'm not 100% sure. Actually, Armored Core only was on the 360. I'm sorry. So it wasn't on Xbox. I was thinking about a different... there was a different game that was similar to Armored Core.
Oh, Mech Warrior or Mech Assault?
No. Yeah, that.
Yeah, Mech Warrior was big with... Because it's a Microsoft property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must kind of get my wires mixed up because I remembered seeing Armored Core.
They're very similar, to be quite fair.
No, I think it honestly what tripped me up is I think I had a demo disc with Armored Core on it, maybe.
Okay.
Or maybe it was a demo disc that had like a trailer from Armored Core on it, because there were like demo discs that had playable demos and then they also had the trailers on there, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why I kind of got my wires crossed.
Yeah.
But speaking specifically, like, I don't have a whole lot of experience with Armored Core from Xbox 360, as you can tell. But with Elden Ring being my first foray into From Software games, I am a avid fanatic, although I didn't ever finish Elden Ring, and I don't ever see myself finishing Elden Ring going down the line. I got a lot of hours out of it. I got a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an amazing game, and I think it's a true testament to what, you know, can be produced by a studio if they don't have money-grubbing overlords above them kind of influencing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're able to really just let their creativity and focus shine. You know, this is the type of content you get, and I don't expect anything less, you know, from an Armored Core. I could see it probably being something. The problem is a lot of people might look at Armored Core if it's not as successful, or it might not even be half as successful, and be like, well, it's a bust. And it's like, is it really a bust whenever Elden Ring was such a smashing success that literally everybody that has ever played games, and sometimes people who aren't even avid gamers, were talking about it? You know what I mean? Like, it was that type of media where people that don't even really play games were talking about it. And that's a really big deal. Whenever those type of games release, those are ones that you look back on in history and say, wow, that was kind of like a moment, a shift in gaming in general. And I just hope that after everything that's happened recently with Blizzard and some other game studios, I really hope that Western teams see, you know, what was done here with Elden Ring, and they see that you don't have to necessarily stick to the mold that's been coming out to generate the most money. You can simply make a great game, and there will be tons of people that purchase it, and then you release DLC down the road in a traditional manner and maybe extract some more money out of your game if you want to that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, you just have to look at it as look how great this game really was.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing to emulate that? Because whether it be business, game development, sports teams, like professional sports teams, whatever the case may be, whenever someone or something or a product is better than your product, or selling better, everyone wants to imitate those types of products. And I hope that's the case with Elden Ring. And I'm not saying like making the hardest games of all time type situation. I'm just saying like polish, gameplay being a strong pivotal focus, also with writing being a huge focus, versus, you know, soulless, lifeless games that have been coming out, you know, for quite a few years now. And I used to say, like, when we would talk about nostalgia and, you know, looking at games with nostalgia lenses, it's obviously easy to think, oh, like whenever I was 14, I was just real into gaming because I was a 14-year-old kid and that's what you do. And then you play those same games that you played when you were 14 and you get the same type of feeling that you got.
Mm-hmm.
It begins to make me believe that maybe, just maybe, there's something to the games that were coming out at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, we can start to really focus on releasing full content games, because I've seen a couple live service, quote unquote, games come out. And I know on this show we've talked about live service in a lot of different lights. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, there are live service games that do it correctly, and those games should be applauded. And then there are other studios that use live service as a crutch to get away with not doing anything, mm-hmm. Without releasing a full game. And, you know, that's not the right way to do it. And I already know we're going to talk about one of those games here coming up after this topic. Shocker. But yeah, I'm curious to hear, you know, your opinions on it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the camp, too, of like, you know, I agree that I think there is something to be said about the way that these games come out. And make no mistake, the Japanese market and, you know, Asian market of games that comes out are by no means, you know, they are the consumer friendly, you know, experience, because we're talking about the same, you know, the same region that produces pachinko machines and gacha mechanics and games like Genshin Impact and things like that, which, you know, overall a well-made game, but relies heavily off the back of microtransactions and, you know, some pay-to-win mechanics. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's by no means anything like that. I think that From Software, though, does a great example of the terms of value and content you get from their games and from their experiences and what you kind of just come to expect from a From Software game. Like, I knew going in after playing Dark Souls and after playing, you know, Bloodborne, Sekiro, those kind of experiences, I knew kind of what I'm getting into at the basis of these games. I know what I'm getting out of it. Yes, I'm right there with you. I haven't beaten Elden Ring yet. Mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if I will, but it's a game that I know when I played 60 hours of, like, I fucking enjoy it. And I take that back. I probably will finish it one day, but, you know, it's one of those games that I know playing it that anytime I can go back to it, I'm going to get the same worth out of it that I had for, you know, 60 plus hours already of it. But it's interesting to think about their future, and because I'm with you. The most, like, Armored Core experience I have is on from, like, a 360 demo disc. I think it was Armored Core 4. It was 4. It wasn't 5 that I remember being on a demo disc and playing and enjoying it, because I liked MechWarrior and Mech Assault on PC and the original Xbox back in the day. But, like, also was very much in the vein of like an Ace Combat, where it's more arcadey and stuff like that. And I'm all for that. I'd much rather, you know, cling to that. It was just a, you know, obviously a little bit of a environmental change a little bit when you're playing that. But at the end of the day, though, I'm with you that, like, they're going to put out something of quality. That's what they've been doing. I have no reason to believe that they're not going to, like, that alone, I'm already going to try. If it is Armored Core, we don't know for sure if it's Armored Core, but let's put it this way. If you go online, go to the good old Google machine, and you type in From Software, click enter, and when you load their website, their tag on their URL or on their hyperlink is Armored Core. It isn't From Software, it isn't anything, it's Armored Core. So, maybe that's kind of a telltale of possibly that's what is coming next. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, the way they're talking about where this project's at, whatever it is, if we potentially get a reveal at, you know, Gamescom opening night or One Night Live, whatever it is that Jeff hosts, it's kind of cap off Summer Games Fest. I wouldn't be shocked if we get that and we get a reveal of that kind of coming out. And because we don't have, they haven't obviously said anything about who's publishing it or not, because From Software is very much kind of gun for hire, where we have Bandai being the producer or the publisher on, you know, Dark Souls and obviously Elden Ring this time around, but PlayStation being the producer and publisher on Bloodborne, and then Activision being the publisher for Sekiro. while all being Souls games, has very much kind of jumped around, but traditionally gone with Bandai. So it'll be interesting to kind of see where that kind of lands. But I'm kind of in the camp of, too, like, you know, a lot of people want DLC for Elden Ring. Like, where's that lie? Because traditionally, their games have come out with DLC, except for, I don't think Sekiro did, actually. The more I think about it, I don't think it actually did. But all Dark Souls titles had it. Bloodborne had it. You know, this is something that is very common with the titles they put out. So I wouldn't be shocked if we do eventually see Elden Ring. And it's clear that they're able to balance multiple projects with multiple teams under their umbrella that, you know, I have full faith that we're going to get whatever they get next. It's going to be of quality. And, you know, I'm like you. I hope we see more of that transcend into the AAA game space. I hope we see more of that come over to the West and see that kind of care and delicacy and really, you know, that kind of polish put on it and that ability to kind of know it's ready when it's ready. And sure, they're a privately owned company. They could do that. But at the same time, too, there's a lot of, you know, privately owned development studios here that, you know, have the ability to somewhat do that. And, you know, there are, and at most there are massive public companies and entities that have the capital and cash on hand to be like, no, take your time. We'd rather it be a fucking smash hit than it not be. So anywho though, Mike, you kind of hinted at it earlier. Let's go on into our next topic and kind of really could be our last, because we're kind of going to mesh both of these together because they're both about, naturally, it wouldn't be an episode of GPGC if we were not talking about Halo in some degree. But let's start off with this one first, Mike, and then we'll get into the second one that kind of just dropped earlier today. Halo the Master Chief Collection could add microtransactions soon. This comes from Ryan Leston over at IGN, as always, link in the description. Halo the Master Chief Collection may be getting microtransactions 8 years after it launched. 343 Industries has revealed that it's currently exploring adding microtransactions to the game, allowing players to purchase Spartan points, currently called Season Points, to unlock gear and customizations they may have missed. Quote, for players who are new to the MCC, or who may not have dedicated much time specifically to unlocking items during the seasonal updates, or are simply completionists looking to catch the latest outstanding items they may need, we are internally exploring a potential new feature for the future in the form of purchasable Spartan points, 343 revealed in a blog post. Currently, items are unlocked with season points, and 343 states that it's happy for players to unlock items through play in the same way. Quote, we are happy with the current system of how players earn Spartan points by completing challenges and leveling up through play, they added. This would be an optional, additive alternative for players who might find the vast scope of content to be an intimidating amount of playtime and want to get ahead or skip the grind, or maybe want to grab specific items they want while, you know, we all have our favorites with that. The option of purchasing Spartan points then is an added extra. You don't have to do it. However, the thinking is that it will allow new players to catch up or old players to grab specific items they want without having to grind for them. Quote, we wanted to inform you of this exploration in advance and provide assurance that purchasable Spartan points would be an additive feature. We will have more information to share about this in the future. It's currently unclear if/when these new Spartan points will begin or will become available, but the Halo MCC community is already uneasy about the thought of microtransactions entering the game. And they show one response they pulled from saying, don't put microtransactions in the game, to their tweet that they're talking about this. If you're worried about the amount of content being, quote, too much for new players, giving more points out for challenges, progression, or allow us to unlock levels in season completely non-linearity. Whether or not 343 Industries will find a good middle ground remains to be unseen, but selling the new Spartan points as a quote additive way of gaining your favorite item is certainly a start. So you kind of brought this up a few minutes ago, Mike, when we were talking about Elden Ring and the fact that how From Software is known for kind of swaying away from those microtransactions. This is a game we've both put hundreds, thousands of hours into, and even their, you know, predecessors of the original releases of these games, even more. Do you think something like this, where, hey, this isn't, we're not talking about, you know, pay to win or, you know, anything to that regard. Do you think this is acceptable in terms of if we're just sticking to cosmetics, or do you feel this could be a slippery slope, knowing how where we're at with, you know, Halo Infinite currently, where this game's gone before, where the franchise has gone before? Do you think something like this is okay, given the landscape of the industry right now being so, you know, pretty much just open to and expected at this point, having microtransactions for at least, you know, customization options and, you know, cosmetics and things like that, if you want them, not necessary to your experience? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I feel like anyone that has a lot of concern for this trend, I feel like it's justified. I do know that companies are always looking to, you know, monetize their work further than just the initial investment, especially in a game where, or in a situation where, you know, you have been spending quite a bit of resources on the game with new content releases. In fact, a lot of people joke that this game gets more content releases than Halo Infinite, which is factual. I could see where it makes sense that you want to monetize this game, because quite frankly, you kind of need to, because, you know, you've spent a lot of resources, you spent a lot of time in getting this game to a point where it's reasonable. And now, you know, you kind of want to capitalize on it. I take exception to the idea that people, you know, I've been very vocal about bashing any studio that uses pay to win. I know, even though it was a micro or a mobile game, pay to win obviously isn't it. However, I've always kind of been on the side of like, cosmetics are probably fair game, but I agree with a lot of the backlash where they're saying, just make the challenges more worthwhile. That's something that they were really bad at in MCC for the entirety of it. That's something that they've been really bad at in Halo Infinite. Making it worth it to do this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, making it actually worthwhile. It's something that they've had a lot of trouble with. And, you know, I just think the backlash that they get at this point, 343 as a company, I mean, all of it's totally, like, fair. Like, you can't even really... I don't know many people that are going out of their way to defend them that often. I know some people do, but at what point do you just kind of say enough is enough? And this feels like, you know, 343 is getting to a point where their back's against the wall, and I just don't know that there's going to be any choices they can make that anyone's going to, like, that people are going to give them the benefit of the doubt with. And I don't know that they deserve it.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. I'm in this torn spot where I love Halo so much, but it's gotten to the point where, like, I don't even refer to Halo Infinite or Halo 5 or Halo 4 as Halo games. I don't. The games that I loved are so vastly different from the ones that have come out more recently. And, you know, I'm stuck in a situation where I've gotten to the point where I just, like, I don't really care about anything they talk about with Halo Infinite anymore. And it's terrible, because our show is a Microsoft show, so I should be paying attention and caring. But, like, I'm just so sick of hearing all this bluster and bravado from this studio. Just shut the fuck up and get to work. That's all they should be doing, is just getting to work, because I'm tired of it. I just don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, it's... Part of me is kind of, I'm right there with you in terms of, you know, I usually am, hey, if it comes from a standpoint of, hey, this is a free to play game. There has to be some way to, for this studio, especially if it's a game that is on a large scale for a company to make, there clearly needs to be some way to make this profitable. Microtransactions in the form of cosmetics are always, to me, a good answer, because, like I've said before with Fortnite, I've said before with a ton of free-to-play games that I'll play You know, and I'm guilty of it with Halo Infinite. I even bought Season 2 because I also haven't played the game since February. But with Halo Infinite, I bought Day 1. I bought the first season Battle Pass. I finished that. Like, I'm okay with getting 170-some hours out of the game, almost 200 hours or whatever it ends up being with campaign or whatnot for, you know, $10 for the Battle Pass. You know, I'm okay with that in that regard. But at the same time, too, when you get to a stance and a point where we are with 343 and kind of a lot of the, you know, contention that's gone on with this franchise and with really, you know, Halo Infinite in general, not to mention MCC, you know, it is tough to kind of turn around and be like, yeah, sure, I'm ready to commit to that. And granted, this sounds okay. Like, in theory, if it's implemented the way that they're looking at it as, hey, you don't want to grind out a whole battle pass, there are so many other, like, free-to-play games or games with battle passes that you could just go and buy ranks in. Like, I play a lot of Destiny. You can just go buy ranks in Destiny. Like, you can buy 10 ranks if you want. That's fine. Like, there's an option to do that. Do I think that kind of lessens the experience? Sure, yeah. But at the same time, too, there have been multiple, like, battle passes that I've bought in random games and live service games that I'm like, fuck, I want to get that cosmetic, and I don't end up doing. And that was the one thing that I was actually super happy about with Infinite was, no matter what, if you buy the battle pass, you have it forever. There's not a time on it. Yeah, there'll be more that come out, but, like, once you own that battle pass, you could go to those, you can go and activate that at any point and work on one 5 years from now that is the first one, or whatever. And to me, I like that because that gives me the idea of, cool, there's this one thing in this battle pass I really want, whether it's, like, in Fortnite, the Spider-Man skin or Wolverine skin or Doctor Strange. Funny, there's a theme with, you know, fucking comic book heroes. That I want to get out of here, but maybe I don't want to grind for fucking 150 hours for one cosmetic. Okay, cool, I could just go and buy it. And that I'm okay with. But at the same time, too, that does open up a slippery slope to some things with microtransactions, with gatekeeping content that I think would be tough to see, because at what point does, okay, yes, this is going well, and an executive then turns around and says, okay, cool, let's slowly increase the imbalance on that. And that's capitalism. That's just going to happen. If more people are doing it, why would they, you know, if we can make more money off it, let's do it this way and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get that. It's a business. But at the same time, too, we're also in the business of entertainment. And if there's no entertainment from that piece of content, what value really is there? What value is there to keep me coming back to that, which is really what you want? You want the retention of me coming back and investing more money, the will to want to invest more money, not because I have to get the one piece of armor that I want to get or the one skin I want. Like, that's where I have an issue with it. You know, it's a really tough, kind of interesting perspective, but, you know, at the same time, too, I can't really dog them about MCC because, and granted, I mean, you're more in the thick of things, Mike, than me, but, you know, the MCC I have right now that I could hop in and play right now is a vastly different experience than I did when I first jumped into it on launch night in 2014, you know, and I'm thankful for that because to me, it's a lot better of an experience than it was at launch. But at the same time, too, you know, I just see where Halo's going right now, and it was what I wasn't hoping for. You know, I enjoyed the campaign, and I had my fun with Halo Infinite, but it's clear that we saw a game that was probably 50% of the way ready, and from a content standpoint, and, you know, that's tough to see. And, too, I was expecting us to get, you know, announcement for DLC for campaign, but at the same time, too, they're not finished with, you know, co-op, and they're not finished with Forge yet, so why should I expect that? You know, it's just, it's tough to see where this franchise is at right now. I was hoping we'd be talking about it in a different light, but that kind of brings me to my next point, Mike, in our last news article, kind of like I was saying, a two-parter in a way. And that is that Halo Infinite's campaign co-op preview kicks off next month. Well, really, this month. If you're listening to this now, it is July 1, at least. So this month, it's going to be happening. This comes from Jay Peters over at The Verge, as always, link in the description. Halo Infinite developer 343 Industries is finally going to kick off a public test of its long-awaited network campaign co-op mode in July, the developer announced Thursday via Polygon. The studio is also planning to test the ability to replay campaign missions, which wasn't in the game at launch. I forgot about that. The beta for both features is targeted to take place from July 11th to the 22nd, according to a press email sent to The Verge. If you own a copy, or if you own the campaign portion of Halo Infinite, or are an Xbox Game Pass member, you could participate by signing up as a Halo Insider. On Xbox, you also need the Xbox Insider app. If you already played Halo Infinite's campaign, anything you have accomplished won't transfer over. For this test, you'll be downloading a new campaign build and starting the game from the beginning. Any progress you make as a group will carry over to solo play, but progress from the test won't transfer to the retail game when the updates are officially released. Crossplay is fully supported, though, so you can play with buddies across Xbox One, Xbox Series X/S, and PC. Up to four players will be able to team up in a party. We don't know exactly when co-op campaign and mission replay will be available publicly, but in a roadmap released in April, 343 Industries said it's targeting a, quote, late August launch for the features. An open beta of Forge mode is targeted for September, according to that roadmap. So, Mike, as somebody who, you know, obviously, I don't believe you finished campaign, did you?
No, I played it for like 2 hours, maybe.
Yeah. I know at one point you were saying, hey, I'm going to wait really until co-op comes out and we can play that experience. Is this something you're going to jump back into, just bluntly?
No.
Nope? Okay.
No, I'm just not interested in it.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, I'm not either. And that I'm somebody who, you know, pretty adamantly enjoyed the campaign. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. This will be the second 343 iteration of Halo that I don't finish the campaign.
Yeah, and it's... And I've even kind of been in the camp of, like, Halo 5, it's not that bad. Like, but then even looking back on it more and more, I'm like, I understand why people don't like that take, and I stand by it. I'm not saying it's like, I don't think it's fucking complete dog water. Like, people are like, it's just atrocious. And I'm like, it's not like we're watching The Fucking Room or anything like that. Like, let's be real. But at the same time, though, I get it. But, you know, Infinite's campaign, I had a lot of fun with. I thought it was really enjoyable, the sandbox nature of it. I thought it did go back to the roots of Halo as best as it could and was really a good mesh of new and old Halo. But at the same time, too, I'm right there with you. I was hoping and praying leading up to this game that my first experience playing this game, like the campaign of this game, would be at whether it's midnight or launch day, with you, me, Adam, we're all playing it together for the first time through. And we all get to explore the open world together. We all get to, you know, go on Zeta Halo, check everything out, and kind of experience this game that we've obviously all been kind of looking forward to and hoping that would turn, you know, come up smelling roses kind of thing. And obviously that didn't happen. And, you know, sure, I'm probably, the more I think about it, maybe I will check it out. Maybe that will be something Adam wants to get into. And, you know, maybe it's something that we just dick around with one night or something like that. But I'll be honest, I don't have that interest in that. What I would have at launch. Like, I would have wanted this to come almost a year ago now. Like, it's just, it baffles my mind that we were at a point with this game that it didn't launch with such a core feature. And I'm not even talking about, like, even if it wasn't, like, even though they did say, hey, we're going to have, you know, couch co-op and all this stuff, like, which it should. But even if they didn't have that and we're like, hey, we have online co-op, we have network co-op, it's good to go at launch, we're going to get couch co-op worked out, but there's an option for you to play co-op. Like, it just boggles my mind. We did not get that with this game. I can't believe that for Microsoft's tentpole franchise. Like, no matter what goes on with the Bethesda acquisition, the Activision Blizzard acquisition, no matter what goes on, the success with, you know, Perfect Dark, or, and hopefully all those games succeed and we do talk about them in the same light. Halo is Xbox as Xbox is Halo, period, at the end of the day. Master Chief's one of the most iconic and recognizable video game characters. Whether anybody wants to like that or dislike it or not, like agree with it, whatnot, it's just true. It is, period. I mean, it may not be the franchise anybody, you know, necessarily garners to adamantly as they once did, you know, over a decade ago, but it's that character is still one of the most recognizable characters in all of video games, and always will be because of the huge success it's had. The fact that this franchise is still dealing with these kind of hiccups in 2022, it's just mind-blowing for your tentpole franchise. I mean, to me, we'll never see Gears necessarily pick up that mantle and run with it. I still think that's a little bit too abrasive of a franchise to do that. And not saying that in a bad way, but just that, you know, it's like, I brought it up, I think, last week on the show. When you look at an experience like, you know, Deadpool, everyone loved the Deadpool movie that came out with Ryan Reynolds, and they're super excited for 3 when it comes out with, now it's under the Disney banner with the MCU, and it, you know, hey, we're going to keep it R and this stuff. It did fantastic box office wise, sold a bunch, yada, yada, but it also sold considerably less than every other superhero movie because it's a rated R movie. Like, there's an abrasiveness to that that cuts out a whole chunk of an audience that would probably go to see that. And that's kind of like with Gears. It's a much more gory experience. It's a much more, I wouldn't even say horror-inspired experience than, you know, what you'll find with Halo. That, you know, so many things are set up right for Halo to succeed, but just never capitalize on it. Like, I'm just starting to think this, like, this, like, franchise is just, like, jinxed or something, like, at this point. Like, not even, like, I'm not even saying that completely as a joke. Like, there's seriousness when I say that. Like, I just think there's something, like, there's a fucking hex or something on it that it shouldn't be this difficult to get this game. And game development is fucking incredibly hard. I am not taking any away from that end of it. But when you see the talent that is behind this game and you see the amount of people who are able to, there's so much talent that's worked on this game. It just shocks me that this still didn't get the result that so many people thought it would, or that it probably should have gotten. Like, it boggles my mind that this franchise is where it's at. And I'm a little more positive on multiplayer, obviously, than you are, Mike. And because we play the game two completely different ways, probably, for the most part, at least. But at the same time, too, it's clear that this experience is just, it's such a flawed, like, because there's, the toothpaste is out of the bottle now. I mean, it is. It's out of the tube now. The toothpaste is out of the tube. You can't get another first impression again with this game. That, how many people are you truly going to be able to get back in August, in what is considered probably, you know, a slower time of the year for gaming, which does help, but right on the cusp of Q3 into Q4 into the holiday season, to come back into a game that has the poor PR that it does now, to come back to that game and invest another 20 hours or whatever it be with a buddy. So you got to convince a friend to come play with you again, you know, to come and do that. The toothpaste is out of the tube, and I don't see how they're going to completely fix that. And that sucks. Because I had a lot of fun with this game to a certain point, but the flaws sometimes with this game, or the flaws that the game does have sometimes just outshine it, and it just sucks. It just sucks that we're at this point with this game, but
yeah, it's the situation with Halo Infinite where you reap what you sow, and 343, you know, unfortunately, like I said, I don't want to see anyone lose their jobs or anything over this type of thing, but, you know, at some point, someone somewhere inside of Microsoft is going to have to start asking fucking questions, because
yeah,
it's just unacceptable, right? You just can't let this kind of shit continue to happen.
And I'm right there with you where, do they have to be, I mean, yes, it would obviously cost millions of dollars to do this, but we're also talking about Microsoft, one of the most profitable and recognizable and most wealthy, like, asset-wise, cash on hand-wise, you know, companies in the world that they could probably do that if they want. That, mm-hmm. you know, at one point do you kind of look back and say that maybe it was a mistake making this studio when you formed it to be, in hindsight's 2020, to be 343 Studios, to clearly be a Halo studio. Like, mm-hmm. this is the Halo studio, and branded that, but also, too, from a truly marketing standpoint of saying this is 343 Studios, where you could have had it named anything else. And cool, yeah, it's a nice nod, just like the Coalition. I get it. Understandable. But at what point do you kind of turn and say, this kind of sucks we set this up as this, because I would like to see 343 touch something that is actually theirs. Like, to see what kind of experience they can get that of a franchise that is truly theirs. Not a franchise that was, you know, hey, Bungie left, you guys are going to oversee it. Sure, there's some pieces from Bungie that remained, but at what point do they kind of look at the game and say, or look at the franchise and say, we need to get this group off of it? And not because there's not talent there, because I think there is. I think there's tons of fucking talent there. But it's not coming together completely. And something is not working with that to produce these games that should be 9 to 9.5 to 10s out of 10s every time they release. Because we should only get...
And by default.
Right. We should be getting one of these experiences once every... To be honest, we probably should be getting one of these experiences once every, you know, 7 to 9 years. And they should be fucking knocked out of the park. Like, that is triple A to even quadruple A polished level games that we're getting. You look at Naughty Dog with The Last of Us and Uncharted. You look at you look at Bethesda with Fallout and Elder Scrolls and things like that, and Starfield, and, you know, even Starfield. You look at a game that vast and that big, and this is the first game since, you know, Fallout 4, really, from them to come out. You know, take Fallout 76 out of it because that was a multi-studio thing. Truly from Bethesda Game Studios, primary Bethesda in-house development studio. And you look at that and you say, okay, yeah, it's clear that it took 8 years to come out, and there's a reason why. And hopefully when this game launches, there's a reason why it took that long to come out. And you get that perfect, you know, it's not going to be a perfect experience, but it's going to be a well-polished experience, or at least for that large of a game, as polished as it can be. Like, I'm okay if these games come out and I'm playing them for 8 years and I'm putting thousands of hours into it. I'm okay with that if they're fucking 9 to 10s out of 10s. Like, that's great. That's fucking perfect. I will take that any day. There's a reason why people are still playing goddamn Halo 3. Right? Like,
yeah, and Halo 2.
And Halo 2. Halo 1. Yeah. Like, there's a reason.
And even Halo Reach.
Yeah. I still think Reach and ODST might be my two favorite campaigns. And that's saying a lot, because I fucking adore the original trilogy of campaigns. But it's, you know, like I said, I will never talk down on, because I don't know, I don't work in game development. I know how difficult game development is, that, you know, I'm even kind of seeing firsthand a little bit. But at what point do we kind of see, okay, we've seen strike after strike after strike, and we're swinging at pitches that aren't even relatively anywhere near here in some regards, that at what point would it just be best for them to get their own project? Something that wasn't an established IP that they're coming in to take over, that they can just say, fuck it. Like, let's take the strengths that we have, and there are a bunch of strengths that they have, and have their own project, have their own universe, their own IP, to just say, fuck it, we can do whatever the fuck we want to do. Like, that, mm-hmm. that's what I want, because I could see that there's tons of fucking talent and, you know, worth in there in terms of skill sets. Like, there is a ton of fucking talent. This game, you look at this game, and it is gorgeous. The art department is incredible. The, you know, some of the gameplay mechanics I truly do love in Halo Infinite, but there's so many elements of that game that I feel sometimes are being shoehorned in to try to fit something that maybe isn't in their wheelhouse. It just sucks. I don't know. Now I'm all fucking flustered. Anyways, Mike, I think that's going to do it for our episode this week. Where can people find you on the internet? Talk about all we talked about. Of course, Halo. It's a Game Pass Gamecast. We got to talk about Halo at some point every week. On top of that, From Software, everywhere and anything that we talked about this week, where can people find you online to talk about it?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitch at MP_ToySoldier, or you can find me on Twitter at ToySxLDIER, and that's Toy Soldier, and the second O is an X.
And make sure you do jump into that Twitch stream, because Weed Shop 3, man, is a good time. It's a good time. And as always, I'm your host, Travis White, a.k.a. Travless, on most internet platforms, including at Travless _ on Twitter. That's TRAVLESS _. You could also find me streaming time to time on twitch.tv/Travless_, same as Twitter. And if you want to play some video games with me, you can do so over on just regular old Travless on Xbox Live and really any other platform. But being our show is a Microsoft show. On Xbox Live at just regular old Travless. That's TRAVLESS. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been your newest episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course, PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to follow us, rate us, review us, all that jazz, wherever you get a podcast at, and follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games, like, and our dope giveaways. With that being said, Mike, that's going to do it for our episode this week. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening, sharing, and being a part of our growing community. Game on, wash your hands, listen to the doctors, Black Lives Matter, and we will see you next week.